From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, who will be the GOP's pick to be the next attorney general, the top lawman in Texas? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This was a week of early voting in the Texas Republican and Democratic runoff elections. The big race is for Lieutenant Governor. Senator Dan Patrick is challenging incumbent David Dewhurst. But there is another major high-profile runoff on the GOP ballot that's no less significant and critical for the future of Texas, Attorney General. Over the past few weeks, both camps have announced numerous endorsements. Most significantly, Senator Ted Cruz is supporting, but comes short of endorsing, State Senator Ken Paxton. And Paxton comes into the runoff with the most votes. The question has been, has State Representative Dan Branch been able to use recent controversies about Paxton's fine and possible criminal prosecution to win votes? The winner of the May 27th primary will meet Houston Democrat Sam Houston in the November general election. I tried to get both candidates on the program, but was told that Ken Paxton is unavailable and his spokesman would do that interview. We'll hear from him later. But first, Dan Branch, who is in his sixth term representing the 108th District of Texas, which includes downtown Dallas, as well as Highland Park and University Park. In the primary, he won 33.5% of the vote.
I'm running to step into the shoes of Greg Abbott and the successful track record that he's built of successfully and aggressively pushing back an overreaching federal government. Texas needs a strong attorney. In many ways, David, this is the state's law firm, over 700 lawyers. I have a track record of getting things done in the state house, an effective conservative who's advanced limited government solutions. And I have a track record of advancing in the legal profession, first in my family to go to law school, first to become a lawyer, started out with some of the state's largest law firms, great law firms based in Houston, and then built my own firm and merged it into the Winstead firm today. Rated at the top of my profession for over three decades, practiced law, worked for the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court, and now advancing the values of Texas in the United States Supreme Court, pushing back against Obamacare, the Hobby Lobby case, and advancing our values and upholding our laws, our pro-life legislation in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, United States Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, courtrooms that my opponent is not even authorized to argue in. So I'm running for Attorney General as someone who has been a full-time practicing lawyer, not a part-time lawyer like my opponent, and I'm running for someone who has a record of being an effective conservative, getting things done over the last decade in the legislature.
Attorney General, that is such a powerful position for Texas. This race has not gotten the attention that it deserves. Why do you think people aren't really keen into what's happening here?
Well, I hope they are. I think they're waking up. I know you've got a lieutenant governor race, which has been sort of turbulent, and you've got some focus also on the beginning of the general election at the governor's level between General Abbott and Wendy Davis. But I do think that people are waking up to this race, and I think it's because the revelations that my opponent, Ken Paxton, has broken the law. I mean, he's admitted just this month, David, to the Texas State Securities Board that he has violated our state securities laws, acts that are felonies. And this is an act that he voted in 2003 to create a felony in the post-Enron, some of the security scandals of the early 2000s. In 2003, we created a new section that said if you were not registered when you were out trying to sell and represent an investment advisory firm, then that would be a felony. And he's admitted this this month on May the 2nd to repeated violations of this law. And so I think that's got people's attention. In fact, it got the attention of his hometown police force who unendorsed him, the McKinney Police Association, and the neighboring community of Allen, both in his senatorial district, who unendorsed him just in the last several days because of, quote, criminal acts that they could no longer put their name behind his. It also caused our opponent, Barry Smitherman, Commissioner Smitherman, who wasn't going to get involved in the runoff, to endorse my campaign and just campaign with me around the state this week in East and West Texas, because he felt like the admissions by Senator Paxton to actions that are a felony puts at risk our, if he were to be the Republican nominee, David, he would be at risk of state investigation, federal investigation based on the admissions, possible indictment, a possible disbarment. And so we have a lot of people waking up to this race because of these, the fact that he won't come out and talk about it. We've gone almost a month now where he will not show up, would not appear with me in any joint appearance, almost 20 appearances, even Tea Party Forum. He would not appear with me. And so I think that's got people questioning what is going on in this race.
Your assertion is because he has this blemish on his record, this $1,000 fine that was given to him by the State Securities Board, that this hurts him as a candidate in the general election.
Well, it appears to make him unfit to be an attorney, let alone attorney general. And it's not just the $1,000 fine. That's the administrative fine and the reprimand. But if you read the four-page May 2nd disciplinary order, the admissions in there are to acts that are a felony, and those are prosecuted, of course, by district attorneys, or some of the other admissions that acts took place during federal oversight. Those would be taken up by the Securities Exchange Commission, and any prosecution would be by a U.S. attorney, or ultimately leading to the United States Attorney General. So we could have if he were to be the nominee, we've got all kinds of concerns as a Republican Party as whether or not he could make it through to the fall, or whether or not he'd be under investigation, or whether or not he'd be indicted, or whether or not he'd ultimately couldn't serve, or if he could serve, he would be weakened because there's a risk of federal investigation and leverage on him by our federal government. Hard to stand up strong to an overreaching federal government if it's got leverage back on your attorney general. And so these are all questions. If he has answers to these, because smart lawyers have looked at all this and said these are all risks, and the voters need to be aware of them. So if there are answers, then Senator Paxton needs to come forth and tell everybody why we don't have to be concerned about the admissions to acts that he voted to make a felony.
Okay, so we talked about Paxton and why you think people should not support him, but let's talk about why people should support you, according to your view. On your website, you've got the issues that you think are upfront and should be tackled. You have fight federal overreach, also open and accountable government. So tell me about what you can do to make sure that Texas has an open and accountable government if you become the next attorney general.
Well, one of the important divisions of the Office of Attorney General is the Open Records Division. And you make decisions. Ultimately, the attorney general has to make the calls on these sometimes difficult issues on protecting an individual's privacy versus making sure our government's open and public information's open. So we have to interpret the Public Information Act, all the open record requests, interpret and oversee the implementation of the Open Meetings Act. And so we need someone who has a record of transparency. My opponent has recently had to amend his Ethics Commission filings for, I think, 9 different boards over many years, and that follows on the heels of a previous failure to disclose a business investment, which he actually had state contracts. But the transparency issue is really important for this office, and so we need someone who has a record on that. I have a record. When I first came into the legislature, I advanced more training for Open Meetings Act and for the Public Information Act. Just last session, I advanced legislation successfully, making our boards of regents open up and televise, stream their regents meetings. And in 2007, I passed a constitutional amendment requiring a recorded vote so that millions of Texans, if there are laws that affect millions of Texans passed, that they can go to the record, the journal, and know how their state senator or state house member voted on an issue. Prior to that, you could have a voice vote on final passage of laws affecting millions of Texans, and no one knew how their state house member or state senator had voted. So I have a record of transparency and advancing transparency, David, and therefore, to me, I think that qualifies me, unlike my opponent, to be the attorney general who will have the responsibility for this very important open records division of the office.
Representative Dan Branch is in the runoff for the Texas Attorney General. Election day is Tuesday, May 27th. Now let's hear from the other campaign. Senator Ken Paxton isn't talking, but his spokesman, Anthony Holm, is. Paxton represents Senate District 8, which covers the Dallas Metroplex cities of McKinney, Allen, Plano, Richardson, and others.
Senator Paxton is eminently qualified. Licensed to practice in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. He has an MBA from Baylor, Juris Doctorates from the University of Virginia, one of the premier law schools in the nation. He has been practicing almost 25 years. He was with a large firm. He was in-house counsel to a Fortune 500, and he's also had his own law practice. He's been a state representative and a state senator for more than a decade, and he has a proven record of making the tough calls, taking the tough votes, sometimes even against his party, standing up for liberty and that which is right.
Give me an example of that. I'm intrigued. When did he vote against the party?
He's voted against the budget, and he's voted against the, for a great example, is the margins tax, perhaps the largest tax in the history of Texas, which was co-authored by his opponent, Dan Branch. And that was pushed through by the moderate Republicans, and Ken Paxton stood up and opposed it. The same with the budget.
Senator Ted Cruz has come out in support of your candidate, Ken Paxton. Talk about what that does for the campaign.
Well, Senator Ted Cruz has said wonderful things about Ken Paxton because he recognizes him as a man who fights for the right, fights for liberty, fights for freedom, upholds the law, the black letter of the law, and does not advance personal agendas, has the courage to stand up and even fight against his own party as needed. So we're honored by Senator Cruz's support, and we think the two gentlemen are in lockstep on just about every issue.
Can you go into some detail, tell the listeners about this $1,000 reprimand that was fined to your candidate Paxton from the State Securities Board, and whether or not there's more to come?
Sure. So first, no, there isn't anything more to come. And Dan Branch's private investigators and opposition research folks were pretty good. And we got a call and said, hey, over the last 10 years, you've sometimes or often been licensed as a in this capacity by the state board, but there's some periods of time over the last decade where that license has lapsed. And we looked into it, found that that report was an accurate statement. Senator Paxton, we proactively picked up the phone and called the securities board and said, hey, we have there have been periods of time over the last decade that this has lapsed. We want you to look into it, please, and tell us what we need to do to make it right. They took a couple weeks to thoroughly review it all, looked at all of the documentation and paperwork, and said, you're correct. You know, the press and your opponent are correct. Periods of time that you had had a paperwork or notice filing lapse, and as a result, you're going to be fined. Okay, so we took a $1,000 fine and moved on down the road. Now, Dan Branch, our opponent, is claiming all sorts of outlandish things that he knows are just factually incorrect in an effort at the last minute to try to win some votes as a bit of a desperate candidate. But that matter is completely resolved.
So this is settled hash, according to you, even though that Branch and his supporters are saying that there is the potential for criminal prosecution under the Texas Securities Act.
Yeah, and so the order that the board presented, which is public and online, was very, very specific and very clear. It's actually a finding of fact in the law. They did not find any fraud or inequities or the other things that would rise it up to a criminal action. It was exclusively a notice issue. And in fact, in that order, they found affirmatively that Senator Paxton relied on the financial organization that he had made some referrals to keep it compliant, and they had failed. So it was a reliance issue. It was a notice issue. Over the last 10 years, Senator Paxton has referred six people to an organization. It's perfectly legal. It's perfectly fine. It's a financial planner. But he has a duty. They both carry a duty, the financial entity and Senator Paxton, to make sure that annual notice is given to the state of Texas. It's a notice filing, and you pay a $285 fee, and you move on down the road. And there were, frankly, there were just lapses during the last decade in periods of time. And as a result, we took a fine. But these outrageous attacks by Team Branch are just absurd. I mean, you don't get criminal harm after over something that's a $1,000 fine. It kind of explains itself once you stop and think about it.
Both candidates are doing their share of trying to tar and feather the opposite. You've put out ads calling Dan Branch a liberal who supports illegal immigration and abortion. Can you defend that?
Yeah, 100%. He voted for a bill that would have given those here illegally Texas driver's license. And that's actually what the law says. He supports driver's license for those who are here illegally. And he tendered an amendment that would have, they were debating a pro-life bill. And he tendered an amendment that would have expanded access to third trimester abortions relative to that bill. Now, that's just unequivocal. And then the third thing is for 3 years, he was a registered lobbyist in Washington, D.C. In fact, two of those 3 years, he was a registered lobbyist in D.C. while he was also a state representative. And one of his clients, while he was a lobbyist, is an AFL-CIO labor union affiliate. So Mr. Branch chose to take money from a labor union and lobby on their for their interests in Congress against the interests of the taxpayer. So we are running on his votes and his record. He's running a campaign of personal destruction. There's a really stark contrast between the two candidates.
PolitiFact Texas says that saying that Branch is in support of third trimester abortions is untrue.
Well, actually what they said is they said that they looked at the amendment he proffered, not relative to the bill that was being debated, but relative to existing law. So a moment ago I was very specific with my speech. Existing law for access to abortions in Texas at the time was a pretty wide access. So it was very evident that the bill was going to pass that reined in the access to abortions. And that was the bill being debated. And in the context of that bill, Dan Branch offered an amendment that expanded the access to the relative to that bill, expanded the access for third trimester abortions. And it was that amendment was defeated by every pro-life Republican and many of the pro-life Democrats. So it's on its face, it's pretty self-evident as to the content of the bill. And the PolitiFact that you're citing was relative to existing law, not the bill that they were actually debating. So in that context, PolitiFact is correct. What is interesting is they chose to look at existing law, which is not what Branch was trying to amend. Branch was trying to amend a more restrictive bill that was about to become law.
In some newspaper accounts, they wrote that since these issues about the security situation, that Paxton has been largely MIA since these issues began. And so we don't have Paxton on doing an interview today. You're his spokesperson. So has he been trying to not as upfront as he would have been?
No, that's factually incorrect statement. It's a narrative advanced by the Branch campaign. We did take about a day and a half and retreat to get all the paperwork together, but that was the prudent thing to do. And if you go to the Senator Paxton's Facebook or the website, SenatorKenPaxton.com, you can see photos for the last several weeks of everywhere he's been, huge groups of 1,000 people. I mean, it's just a factually incorrect statement and line of attack. Now, we did cancel one event that evening, and that's true. We thought it was the most prudent thing to do was to honor the security board's request, get all the documentation available to them, and advance it quickly. So we took about a day and a half to really review our stuff internally. But beyond that, we have been full bore.
Anthony Holm is the spokesperson for the Ken Paxton campaign. Senator Paxton was not available to speak for himself in the interview. We heard earlier from the other Republican candidate, Representative Dan Branch. They are seeking the nomination for Attorney General and will face Democrat Sam Houston in November. Runoff day is Tuesday, May 27th. The runoff falls the day after Memorial Day, and many people are busy wrapping up the school year and gearing up for summer, and that's seen as one more reason why there's so little public interest in this critical runoff. Harvey Kronberg of the Quorum Report says expect a low voter turnout in these highly important races.
I think the current estimate is between 600,000 and 700,000 in the Republican primary runoff, and incredibly only maybe 200,000 in the Democratic primary. Of course, that has to do with how few contested races there are in that one.
We're deciding some major races, the lieutenant governor and the attorney general.
Of course, the Republicans do have the structural advantage, and if history is any guide, over the last 20 years, the winner of the Republican primary will win the statewide race.
So basically, we're going to pick who's going to be lieutenant governor and who's going to be attorney general.
Right, but you don't want to prejudge the viability of the Democrats at this stage. The only election that's mattered has been the Republican primary. And the Republican primary represents about 1.4 million people in a state of 25 million. And that as opposed to the November election this year, will probably draw over 5 million people.
Right. And as you said, it's even more concentrated in the runoff.
Right. This is very few people controlling the reins of power in Texas.
And how do these runoff voters tend to track?
Once upon a time, we would look at the runoff, and it would prove to be more moderate than the primary itself. But over the last three or four election cycles, with the advent of social media and the dominance of talk radio and cable network news programming, we've seen at least in Texas, it's been the most inflamed and the most ideological of voters on both sides that tend to turn out. Now, that's different. This last Tuesday, Tea Party types, for instance, in the rest of the country were pretty well whomped. But here in Texas, the recent polling has been any indication Tea Party is going to do very well.
So let's talk about this attorney general's race. I think most people who are paying attention know enough about the lieutenant governor's race. But the AG's race, we've got two candidates, both of them are presently office holders, Senator Ken Paxton and Republican Dan Branch. And it was Senator Paxton, he's the guy who's got his arm around very tightly around Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz.
I don't think 90% of the primary voters knew the difference between Dan Branch and Ken Paxton. However, they did know Ted Cruz. Senator Cruz's polling numbers are not very good in the rest of the country, but among Republican primary voters, he's gold. He'd never officially endorsed State Senator Paxton, but he said some positive things about them that they put in the commercial, and Senator Cruz has not asked him to pull the commercial down.
So we're seeing a lot of commercials now from Representative Dan Branch. He's outspending Senator Ken Paxton, and he's trying to make hay out of some legal problems that Paxton has had. Tell us about that, and does it really matter?
Well, back in the 2000s, Senator Paxton had several clients. He gave them financial advice, did not disclose that he was getting a commission or any money for directing them to those investments. The Texas securities law prohibits doing that kind of financial representation without disclosure to your clients. We know of at least three cases in which he's done this. The law is pretty explicit on this. There's both civil and criminal proceedings that can come from it. Once it was disclosed, there's still one case that's inside that within the state statute of limitations. He went to the Texas Securities Commission and cut a deal where he essentially admitted that he had done that with which he had been accused, gave up the right of appeal, and signed essentially a confession, and then and paid a fine. Now, this is a civil proceeding, but this same act also considers a criminal violation for the same action. So, there are a number of senior Republicans around the state that are concerned that Senator Ken Paxton essentially admitted or conceded that he has not only broken the law, but potentially broken the criminal statutes, and that a watchdog group or somebody could file a complaint, go to a grand jury, and conceivably be indicted. He could be disbarred down the road, and that it would be very destabilizing. His supporters, however, remain undeterred, and while I think it has probably eroded his margin somewhat from the 11 or 12 point lead he had last March, the conventional wisdom is that he is still somewhat in the lead against Representative Branch.
So he paid his $1,000 fine, and the question is it settled? Or are there still legs on this, and could it bite him if he wins the runoff and goes into the November general election?
Well, the worst-case scenario for Republicans is that some kind of legal proceeding is initiated between the primary runoff and the general election. Because, as we discovered with Congressman DeLay, once you're on the ballot, past a certain point, you can't get off the ballot unless you vacate the state, or there's a couple of two or three special circumstances where your name can be removed from the ballot, but you can't be replaced. But that's a fairly remote problem at this stage, in that most prosecutors and law enforcement types don't want to be seen as interfering with elections. A consequence, criminal consequence on this, is probably would not surface until after the election.
Okay, but he signed the confession, as you say, so that he could be reprimanded and be fined $1,000. In that confession, he admits that he did not disclose to these individuals where he was advising them on making investment arrangements. He did not tell them that he had a stake in that, and these people lost money on those deals. At least one did, and so that, just if he doesn't even get charged, what about just the question of it? And since this has come out, how he's gone underground?
That's correct. He stopped going. He's for at least 3 weeks. He did not have any public appearances. Once he signed the fine and the confession, he did make a few appearances. But this is probably the most ideologically inflamed primary that I can remember. And the battle inside the Republican Party, the lines are very, very clearly drawn. And the other unusual thing or significant thing about this primary is that the Tea Party endorsements and Tea Party-type slate cards appear to have a disproportionate impact. So even though arguably essentially taking advantage of clients, which is what this is all about, without disclosing that you're profiting from taking advantage of them, in a normal election would probably reflect on character and be a fairly substantial negative. This election is so ideological, and the Tea Party seems at this stage to be so organized that it may not have any impact.
Harvey Kronberg is the editor of The Quorum Report, an online newsletter that covers Texas politics. You can find it on the web at quorumreport.com. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to the program with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, or you can comment directly on the show page at tpr.org. There are also past Texas Matters programs there that you can give a listen to, and you can find them on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.